Does this sound familiar? I'm not deaf, you're mumbling. Why is this cafe so loud? Wow, those TV subtitles really help, don't they? Once you hit 40, you've probably got your eyes checked, just in case, but many of us have a much more cavalier approach to our hearing. My guests today say that that could have a drastic effect on our health. They think we should take hearing as seriously as we do cancer and obesity. David McAlpine is a Professor of Hearing, Language and the Brain, and Catherine McMahon is Macquarie University's Head of Audiology. They're both from the Australian Hearing Hub. And if you've experienced hearing loss in life, how has it affected you and what have you done about it? You can leave a message on our Facebook page. David and Catherine, welcome to the program.
Hi, Hilary.
Thank you, Hilary.
David, first to you, why do we think of hearing differently to vision, do you think?
I think we don't really know what we're supposed to hear. So when we think about our vision, we're thinking about whether we can read a sign or whether we can read a book, for example, whether we're long-sighted or short-sighted, and it has an immediate impact on us. But we're never quite sure when we have functional hearing what we're meant to hear. How are we supposed to pick out a voice from a crowded party, or can we hear someone across the room or across the desk? So we haven't quite calibrated and understood what that means, and we just tend to try and accommodate it somewhat rather than actually go and get it fixed.
Do we also think of it as just a normal part of aging?
We do tend to think that quite a lot, and that's sometimes seen as a joke, sometimes seen as something we can, you know, make fun of, but we also see it when we're younger as a badge of honour. We go to a club, we get deafened with the noise, we go out and we boast about it, and we wouldn't do that with our vision.
Now, Catherine, we think of glasses as quite common, but according to your research, it sounds like hearing devices should be a lot more common than they are. How many of us suffer from bad hearing?
Certainly, hearing loss is associated with ageing. And so as we get older, one in three people who are over 65 suffer from some type of hearing loss. And hearing aids could certainly be beneficial for these people.
And how much of that hearing loss is untreated and unknown, perhaps?
Only about a quarter of people who have a hearing loss, a measurable hearing loss, will seek help and will obtain hearing aids. And of those, there are a small proportion, but still a remaining proportion, that don't wear the hearing devices when they get it.
And why is that? Is that because of what David was talking about, that the hearing loss sneaks up on people, or is there something wider at work there?
I think it is partly because hearing loss sneaks up on us. Also, the communication partner will speak more clearly, will speak loudly to accommodate it. So I think that there's some of the burden of the problem is actually on the communication partner rather than on the person with the hearing loss. So they don't recognise necessarily that there's a problem.
And does that mean that across the board we're seeing a rise in hearing loss in our society?
We're concerned that there will be a rise in hearing loss. Certainly, there are some estimates to suggest that might be the case. And with the ageing population, there definitely will be an increase in the prevalence.
So, David, do people have a realistic expectations of what it will take to fix hearing loss? I'm wondering if that's a factor that plays into their willingness to seek help.
One of the issues is that people get disappointed with devices. So when you have a hearing loss and you get a hearing aid, it's not actually going to fix what's gone wrong in your inner ear. It's going to make sounds louder and do a few tricks to try and pick up sound directions, but it's not actually going to solve the problem. And we often compare hearing aids to glasses, but glasses are not correcting the same sort of problem. If you had the same sort of vision problem that you have hearing, which is with the little sensory cells, you'd need a dog and a stick. You wouldn't be wearing glasses. And that's what we're trying to get across, that if you have a hearing loss, you've damaged irreparably and irreversibly the little sensory cells inside your ear that do the hearing. And a hearing aid, and they can be fantastic, but a hearing aid is essentially amplifying the sounds to get over part of that problem. But it's not doing what we know is often the problem as we get older, and that is we can't distinguish different sounds from each other. And that's often why people put these hearing aids in the drawer.
Do people sometimes then think, well, I know that hearing loss is irreparable, perhaps I'll just accept a lower level of engagement with the world and I'll stay home and be deaf?
Well, some people do that, but it has huge implications on their lives. So they're socially disconnected. It's a depression that can come through. There's a whole range of risk factors associated with taking yourself out of the loop. And we often talk, and we are talking now, about these issues of increased risk of dementia and increased social isolation, depression, and they're all bad things. And we've got to be careful that we don't just think that all of those are the health issues. The actual health issue of a hearing loss is the problem. And if we can try and resolve that, that may well lead to benefits in other aspects of health.
And we'll go into some more detail about those risks of long-term health impacts with Catherine in a moment. But David, just quickly, is there a difference between how we see hearing loss during life compared to being born deaf in Australia?
If you're born deaf, and I would argue, and I did argue last week at a meeting I was at, that there's no better place to be born deaf than Australia. We've got a care pathway that's absolutely phenomenal. It's not just that you get your hearing screened in newborn hearing screening programs, and they happen worldwide, but you get actually taken up and have an intervention. You get hearing aids or cochlear implants very early in the first few months. And even in the United States, there are jurisdictions in the United States with a very fractured healthcare system where there's only a 40% take up or a 40% intervention rate after you've been screened and found to be deaf. So there is a real difference there. We don't have that care pathway associated with the adult hearing loss. You drift into it. You may get your hearing tested at the age of 2 days at hospital. You'll never get it tested until you're 65 afterwards.
Now, David, you, in your work at the Australian Hearing Hub, have been calling for hearing to be taken much more seriously as a health issue. What specifically do you mean by that? What would that look like?
I think we need a combination of government and personal responsibility. We've got it in other systems. We've got Slip, Slop, Slap campaign back in the 80s. I used to live in Perth back then, and until that point, you were slathering yourself in oil and sitting on the beach. You're now in a situation in Australia where if you didn't put a rashie on your child, other parents would be looking at you with askance. We've got a situation where the government, personal responsibility, and a good campaign kept on and keeps on saying you've got to look after your skin. And of course, the hearing loss that gets you when you're in your 20s and going to a gig, it creeps up in you in your 60s, just like skin cancer. We've got to take this as a national priority in Australia. And Australia is one of those places that could do it with a good public health system and a good engagement of people with societal messages like this.
And we had Sid the Seagull for the Slip, Slop, Slap campaign.
Sid the Seagull, indeed.
What kind of mascot might we need for a hearing campaign?
I wouldn't like to comment on that, but I can imagine a few.
I thought of Aiden the hearing aid. It's just, you know, blue sky at the moment.
Yeah.
Catherine, let's talk in a bit more detail about this new research, because some people might be really surprised to hear there's links between the health problems that David mentioned. Let's start with dementia. What's the link there?
There's an association between hearing loss in middle age and cognitive decline through to dementia. We're not yet sure whether or not if you intervene early, that will change the outcome of the cognitive decline. But we certainly know there's a number of people doing research to try to understand this in a bit more detail.
And why are we speculating that there might be this link?
Well, the association has been shown across multiple studies, and there could be a number of reasons for it. An example would be that with hearing loss, we put in a lot more mental effort into understanding what's being said. And so that mental effort might have an ultimate drain on the brain, which would cause a later cognitive decline.
That's interesting, isn't it? Because some people think of extra mental stimulation as being a useful thing to stave off dementia, but you're saying this kind of cognitive load is different to that.
I think it's a continual effort that people are investing that's considered not to be a positive outcome of engagement, but a more negative outcome of stress.
And how big is your increased risk if you do have hearing loss?
For a mild hearing loss, twofold risk. For a moderate hearing loss, it's threefold risk. And for a severe hearing loss, it's fivefold risk.
Wow, so five times more likely to develop dementia if you have a severe hearing loss.
That's right.
That's huge. Well, let's move on to cardiovascular disease. What's the research showing there?
There's also an association between hearing loss and cardiovascular disease. And in fact, loud noise is also associated with cardiovascular disease too. So the association there could either be that a cardiovascular problem or a vascular problem will cause both hearing loss and cardiovascular disease, or an alternative explanation could be that something else, another factor like noise, will cause both hearing loss and cardiovascular disease.
Interesting. More research needed. Now tell us about the link to falls, because this was a surprise for me.
So hearing loss increases our risk of falls. And there are, again, a couple of explanations about this. And David before spoke about the fact that hearing loss leads to social isolation. And of course, if we are more socially isolated, then we could be less physically fit. And this could be associated with an increased risk of falls. The other thing is that, again, this concept of cognitive effort, when we are really struggling to hear what's being said, or we're really trying hard to listen to the environmental sounds, when, for example, we're walking across a road, then sometimes we'll pay more attention to what we're hearing, and we don't have as much cognitive capability or capacity to be able to then consider what's in front of us. And so tripping or falling is one of these things that we're at risk of.
You also looked at the link between diet and hearing loss. What did you find there?
Yeah, I think certainly good nutrition leads to better hearing outcomes. And I think that's across the board. Better nutrition, good exercise in life. You know, eating well is a very good way to improve your outcomes with aging, I think, across all domains.
We're speaking with Catherine McMahon, who's the head of audiology at Macquarie University's Australian Hearing Hub, and David McAlpine too. He's a professor of hearing, language and the brain there. And if you've experienced hearing loss in life, how has it affected you and what have you done about it? You can leave a message on our Facebook page. And someone sent a text: if you get your hearing checked, you just get someone trying to sell you a hearing aid, whether you need it or not. David, I'm wondering if it's possible to get independent testing that suits your actual needs.
I'm pretty sure that most audiologists are looking at your actual needs. And yes, we often think there is this pressure with hearing aid companies and or independent audiologists or anyone to sell us a device. But remember, these are healthcare professionals. And it's very important to remember that people are actually looking at what the outcomes will be if they give you a particular device. Now, there is some pressure with respect to different devices. There are some audiologists that are maybe more associated with one company or another, but they're healthcare professionals. And there have been instances globally where people have tried to missell this somewhat, and the authorities, you know, take a dim view of that. I don't think it's too problematic. I think one of the problems is that people come away with an expectation of a hearing aid that's not actually what a hearing aid will do for them. It does not make your hearing back to what it was. And that expectation and the engagement with the process that would actually lead you towards good communication, but not the same hearing as you had before, that's a major factor.
The ACCC, though, a few years ago said that the for-profit hearing testing centres that you see springing up in your shopping strips do have a sales-first culture. Are you saying that there's enough public health alternatives for people to access an audiologist that is independent?
There definitely are not enough. So we know that if you're born deaf and you have hearing loss up to the age of 26, the Community Service Obligation of Australia will actually be taking you through that. After that, or in other circumstances, you're pretty much on your own unless you have a voucher for Australian Hearing, and certain groups of people, including Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander people of Australia, will have those at various ages. But in the middle, in the point at where you're actually engaging with hearing loss for the first time, there isn't actually a pathway. So you are open to that. And of course, most people don't know what their hearing is supposed to be. They go in and they think it's a, you know, consumer electronics a device in this current age, or they think it'll restore their hearing. So there's no knowledge and there's no pathway. And I think that's something we really have to get right in Australia. I'm confident we could get it right in Australia because we've done it for children, but I think we need to do it for adults. And so it's not so much a case of everyone's trying to get one over on you. It's the combination of, yes, a sales pressure in some cases, but also a lack of knowledge on the part of the customer or the patient. It's something we need to deal with as a societal level.
Well, this whole conversation is filling me with confidence about my latter years. I come from a long line of people with increasingly early hearing loss. But David, you're on record as saying you think that it's actually good news to have these discussions. Why is that?
I think it gets to the point where we understand we can take some responsibility for it. We have to have a noise diet perspective. So we've got a lot of challenges out there. If you take the AirPods that Apple sells, well, you know, everyone's wandering around with them all the time, creating a large sound intensities at their ears. And if we can get across to people that you don't have to, you know, sit at home or go and have a cup of Milo and go to bed, you can actually go to gigs and concerts and even listen when you're traveling in a safer way than we're currently doing. And that's part of the messaging we have to get across. A huge amount of what we know now about our hearing in later life is that It's a cumulative damage that we're getting over a life course, and a lot of that is associated with exposure to an increasingly loud sound environment. So we know that loud sounds cause you to go deaf, and we've regulated that at work. We just haven't regulated it at play. So we're simply in that situation where you can do anything to your hearing over 40 years with no one really intervening, but you couldn't do it at work. We need to change that conversation.
And Catherine, do we know that if we fix the hearing or address the hearing loss, it fixes the health issues in the future as well?
We don't know that at the moment, but certainly hearing loss is a modifiable risk. And so there's a number of groups that are looking at these issues at the moment to try to understand if you intervene early and intervene well, do we change the outcome?
And what are hearing aids like these days? Because people who saw them in the old days in their grandparents might think of them as these enormous clunky things.
Hearing aids are far different from what they were. Certainly there's been a lot of work that's been done to try to reduce the size of them, to increase their cosmetic appeal. But importantly, we need to consider which hearing device is best for the person. Having a very small in-the-ear or invisible hearing aid is not going to be particularly useful for somebody who has dexterity issues who might have visual problems. So changing the batteries is a bit of a challenge. So I think matching the device to the person is very important, irrespective of what the size might be.
And are there some new technologies and developments in the space of wearables for mild hearing loss?
Yeah, absolutely. That's a really good question. I think that there's been a huge change recently and a huge shift in people's mindsets. And it's really started from the United States, where the FDA is changing the regulations, enabling for people who have mild to moderate hearing loss to access hearing devices online. This means that they don't need to go and see a GP or don't need to see an audiologist in order to access these devices. This is important because I think that in some cases, wearables or hearables might be a better first option for people who might have some hearing problems, but don't necessarily feel as though they need to have a hearing aid that they wear constantly. So I think this is a nice soft entry into the pathway of hearing healthcare, where it can just help people a little bit to enhance their hearing within more challenging situations.
And David was talking before about the difficulty some people have in adjusting to full-on hearing aids. How long does it take your brain to adjust to this new mode of hearing?
So Franklin suggests that, Franklin is a researcher in the United States, and he suggests that it's about 2 years that it takes for your brain to really adjust to hearing aids. But I think, you know, you need to consider it to be a concerted effort to use them and to listen to what's being said. In the same way that if you get a knee reconstruction, there's a time in which you really have to rehabilitate to a new knee.
Well, and let's finish up with the all-important question of when you should get your hearing checked if you do suspect there's a problem.
The earlier the better. I think, you know, if we can really put hearing into a public health framework and have people know what their hearing is like, they're more likely to do something about it, whether it's to access hearables, whether it is to try to change their communication environment so that they're not constantly tired of listening in challenging situations.
Well, I'm off to cull my noise diet and looking forward to some greater policing of the public spaces in regards to noise. Thank you both so much for appearing on the program today.
Thanks, Hilary.
Thanks, Hilary.
David McAlpine is a professor of hearing, language and the brain, and Catherine McMahon is the head of audiology, and they're both at the Australian Hearing Hub at Macquarie University. I'm Hilary Harper, and you're listening to Life Matters.